Okay, now we're rolling. Welcome.
Hi.
Nice to see you on here. Thank you for being on. So exciting.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, I got to say, you know, when I heard we were going to have you on, I'm like, "Oh my gosh, we're leveling up. Like we have a legend among us. This is so exciting." I was super psyched to talk to you, and thank you we scheduled this and I had COVID. And so we had to reschedule. So I appreciate you being flexible. I know I said this backstage, but thank you so much.
Hey, you are welcome. You are welcome. All good.
I really appreciate it. So if for those of you listening for the first time, this is the Ponytails Podcast. We interview people who sold books door to door with a company called Southwestern Advantage. Go check out our bio for our show. It'll tell you a little bit about exactly what that means if you're not familiar. But if you're one of us, one of us, then welcome to the show. We have all sorts of different conversations with alumni and we find out what they are up to now. 99% of the time, there is a ton of added value that we have here because people share a lot of their expertise. And so please tune in, maybe take out a piece of paper and a pencil, take some notes or pen and take some notes because I'm sure we're gonna learn a lot here today. With me, let me give you a quick introduction, Emmy, and so that way people know exactly who we're talking about and tell them a little bit about what's going on. We have Emmy Brown on the show, and Emmy has been a part of the Southwestern family company since 2000. Currently, she's a senior partner with Southwestern Consulting, and she's an executive coach and consultant working with executives across all different industries, helping them build sales, leadership, and recruiting systems. With her husband, Dave Brown, who we had on the show a few months back, she co-leads a large organization of Southwestern Consulting. And then also along with Dave and Andres Albi, who we also had on the show about a year and a half ago, she heads up the European division. She is also president of Southwestern Speakers and Southwestern Training. Emmy is currently in Nashville, Tennessee, originally from Clinton, North Carolina. She sold for 9 summers with the education division from 2000 to 2008. Her favorite scroll is number 9, I Will Act Now. And man, what a pleasure it is to have you. Thank you for being on here again. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I love people who actually put a T in Clinton. When I grew up, it was Clinton, North Carolina.
Clinton. Hey, it's my second language, I think. Or maybe I grew up in Nebraska. We'll pick one of those. You say Clinton?
Cool. Well, that's how it was said growing up, Clinton, you know, and Dave and I are actually building a house in Lebanon, 8, 9, 10, Lebanon, 12. It's not Lebanon, Tennessee. It's Lebanon.
Lebanon. Yeah. It's kind of like when I sold in Massachusetts, there's a town, it's spelled H-A-V-E-R, Haver, and then H-I-L-L, one word. So you would think Haverhill. No. Haverhill. You're like, all right, that makes no sense. But Massachusetts, the East Coast, I guess, just different. Awesome. Welcome to the show. Real quick before we jump right in, we are brought to you guys by Enlight Energy. It is a company that was started by Julio Hernandez, an alumni, of course. He's actually our oldest partner here on the show. So just wanted to give them some love and shout out to them. If you guys are looking to go into the solar industry or want to learn a little bit about how that is and how it works in Florida particularly, but really in all sorts of different states, they have markets everywhere. If you guys want a little bit of knowledge, or maybe you're looking to get solar or get into solar, maybe change your careers and earn some income, hit them up, man. It's such a great company. I worked with Julio for about a year and a half towards the beginning of the podcast, and yeah, the money is real and it's there. Solar is a booming industry, so make sure you guys get in there. Lots learned from Julio. His episode's actually going to be coming out next week or two, so keep an eye out for that if you want to get all of the details of the opportunity for that. So thank you so much, Julio. We love you. All right, Emmy, what do you say we jump in?
Okay, let's do it.
All right. Now, lately, we've been asking the question. I kind of warned you about this. We've been asking the question right off the bat. Was it a cult? Were we in a cult?
We were. We were indoctrinated in leadership and sales principles. And I think we're always being indoctrinated in one way or the other. And I'd rather get indoctrinated in good stuff.
I love that. Everybody says, "Wow, we drank the Kool-Aid." I'm like, "Yeah, but the Kool-Aid was actually good. It wasn't poisonous. Everybody drinks some sort of Kool-Aid, right? Some people think the earth is flat, which whatever Kool-Aid that is, that's fine. But
you're always being sold an idea, and I'd rather be sold something that's actually going to help me, right? Be a better person and develop my character than an idea that's not really healthy for the world.
Oh, amen to that. It's so funny because even though we've had all sorts of different opinions about Southwestern as a whole, and people have had amazing experiences, of course, we've had some very positive experiences and we've had some not so positive experiences from our, like, the book sales specifically. At the end of the day, regardless, everybody that we've had on, I'm like, you know what? I'm glad I did that though. I'm glad that I was brave enough and went out there. Nobody's mad at the student manager that presented with this opportunity because what they learned was so valuable that they still use it today, regardless of how they feel about, you know, how they left or whatever. Like, it's always been such a positive, like what you're saying is, like, you learned really good ideas about self-talk and all that stuff. So I'm glad you mentioned it that way, but what a wonderful time it was. So let's run through kind of some highlights. I always like to start out with, like, what are you up to now? And if you could catch us up from 08 when you left the book field itself to what you're up to now, if you could give us, like, some highlights of the things that you've been up to and what it looks like for you today.
Yeah. So I mentioned this to you before that we started the podcast, but I wear many hats. So it's Southwestern Consulting. You know, we do one-on-one coaching as our lead product. But we also do training and speaking and consulting services. And it just makes sense. Like, when we have clients where we have a one-on-one relationship, it makes sense that they want us to come in and deliver it in a group as well. Or, you know, for us to be on stage at their meetings, or, you know, so it makes sense that we do those other things. So I, you know, kind of help run the whole company, but also, you know, have direct responsibility for our training business and our speaking business. And, you know, that's kind of the short story of where we are now, but there's been a lot of bumps and bruises and twists and turns and a lot of changes along the way. And I could certainly, you know, tell some stories about how I even got into this thing, because it wasn't, it was very much that I was recruited by Dave in this business.
So, yeah. So let's talk about that. So how did you first start into the, in the coaching world, and how, what was kind of your journey along the way that brought you to this point? Cause senior partner is pretty cool. That's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, I started with this before it was a coaching business. I don't know if you know this, Andres, but the original name of our company was Success Starts Now.
Wow. I did hear about this. Don't know the details, but I hear the exclamation point right there.
Yeah, there was actually an exclamation point in the title of our company, right? The name of our company. It was a seminar business. And so I didn't start it. It was my friends that were founding the company. And they started it as a seminar business because that's all that we knew at that point. That's what Tom Hopkins did, and Zig Ziglar, and Jim Rohn, and Brian Tracy, and you know, they all had, Tony Robbins, they all had big seminars. And that's how we thought we could get the Southwestern message and the Southwestern principles out there to the world, was by putting on big seminars. And like I said, it was my friends that were starting this thing, and I was making fun of them. I was saying to Dustin, hey, who is going to pay you to be a sales trainer? And, you know, and you guys want to go live on the road and be gypsies, and this is, you guys are crazy. Like, and I didn't know if the company was going to make it, but, Dave had actually introduced Dustin to Rory Vaden, to Henry Bedford. Then Henry Bedford had brought Gary Michaels into the conversation, and you know, they kind of started the company together. But in the first year of the company, you know, Dave was I was living in Austin, Texas at the time, and Dave was driving down through Austin on his way to San Antonio, where he grew up, and he would stop in Austin and say, hey, come on, you need to do this. You're one of us. Come hit the road. And I'm like, no, thanks. You know, I'm set. I want to live in Austin.
Wait, so you guys weren't married at this point?
No.
Oh, wow. No. So wait, what year was this then? This would have been.
So this was 2008. And
oh, right after.
And when I left Southwestern, I actually didn't go far. I said I wanted to go far. I was like, no, you know, I said, you know, I want to start my own thing. I don't want to work for anybody. And I can tell you a little bit about what I did in the interim. I actually did quite a bit in a small little interim there. But Dave was coming, he kept coming through town and he was actively recruiting me. But in that little season that I was gone, I actually recruited over 20 kids to sell books while I wasn't with Southwestern, right? I recruited 10 for my personal team and 10 for other team members around the San Antonio area and stuff. I ran info meetings and signed them up for other people. But I was saying I'm gone from Southwestern. And during that time, I'd actually saved up quite a bit of money for a 27-year-old kid. I had $250,000 in the bank. And back then in 2006 and 2007, you know, real estate was hot. Yeah. And there were all those books out there, you know, Get Rich Quick and Zero Down Real Estate and Instant Real Estate Millionaire. And I wanted to do something different. I had, you know, had never really done anything outside of Southwestern. I wanted to, you know, make a big splash. And I also thought I do well at everything. I'm going to figure this out. So I started investing in real estate. I bought my first rental property. I actually lived in a neighborhood with several Southwestern alum. So
it was like a clan of you.
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. Holly Flitner, who's now Holly Myers, lived down the street. And, you know, like, and Tomas Corzo is the one that sold us our house. And, you know, and he lived in the neighborhood too. And, you know, a bunch of Southwestern alumni, you know, in the neighborhood. But I bought my first rental house. I bought my, I invested in a flip project, bought two duplexes that were beside each other that I was rehabbing and converting into condos. And I started putting money in a building a spec home. And all of that was really going, it seemed like it was going well on paper. Yeah. It was making a lot of money. And if you know, like 2008, the market turned. And I would have actually survived it. But my contractor had embezzled somewhere between $500,000 and $750,000 in my name.
Neat.
Yeah. Yeah. He closed his business, fled to Dubai, it left his fiance, you know, fled to Dubai. He still lives there because he's extradited and can't come back in the country. But I during this time was realizing I was kind of, it took me a while to figure out I was in deep doo-doo. Like I thought I was making a ton of money in real estate. And then I started getting these lien notices and then it started turning into before it was turning into lawsuits, when it was still lien notices, that was when Dave was kind of coming around and, hey, you need to do this. You need to go on the road. Like my boyfriend and I actually broke up. Very amicable boyfriend, breakup. And he's a book person too, but, I was realizing I just need to figure something out. I am not in a good place. I need to get around good people. And, Chris Samuels was my mentor at Southwestern. You know, he was my DSM when I was recruited and he's taught me so much in life. He, you know, I kept asking him, hey, like, should I go do this thing? And he said, well, you know, these are good people and you need to be around the best people, you know? And I said, well, is this company even going to make it? And he said, this group of people doesn't know how to fail. They may fail in the short term, but they're going to figure it out. So, long story short, I guess I'm fast forwarding through some details here because I could spend the entire podcast talking about
it. I mean, this is, there's so much juice. I mean, I did not expect this start. This is amazing.
But long story short, I put my stuff in storage. Actually, I had a little 6-month selling stint. Maybe I need to add this into the story too. Matt Ross had actually taken over 80% of my, like, when I left Southwestern, I got to choose where my base went, which was really cool. I got to say, hey, put these people under him and hey, give these people. And Matt didn't have a base to come back to South. So I was able to give him a base to work to come back to Southwestern. But we had that rule in place. Hey, if you sell 3,000 units, you can get paid, you know, off your org. So I called Matt and I said, hey, would you mind if I went out and sold for like 6 weeks and get paid off my base? And he said, sure. So I went to Asheville and partnered up with Rowdy Green and kind of like AOL'd with Rowdy in Asheville for like 6 weeks and sold my 3,000 units. And at that time, Dave was saying, hey, you know, you got to do this. He asked me, what are you doing after you're done selling books? And I said, I don't know. And he said, hey, you want to come to Chicago and hang out? We got this meeting, but we're going to go have a lot of fun. We're going to, you know, be hanging out in downtown Chicago. And I'm like, sure. So I went to Chicago and I didn't know I was getting duped into a recruiting meeting. He said, come on in and say hello to everybody before you go shopping and whatever. And I came in and AJ said, hey, I worked you into the introduction. We're going to do this little exercise together. And Dave locked the door. And next thing I knew, I was in a border bash for 2 days. And I ultimately decided to come into Success Starts Now because getting on the road and working hard was going to be good to get back to my best self. But I didn't think I would do it long term. I actually told Rory Vaden, this is a 1-year gig. I'm putting my stuff in storage. My dog and I are a package deal. He has to come on the road with me. And five years later, I got my stuff out of storage.
No way.
Yeah. Wow.
So, okay. I have so many questions already. Okay. So first of all, just because the elephant in the room, how do you know that the dude's still in Dubai? Are you guys he's like just stuck there because he's got extradited? And like, how did that conclude? Like, how did you get out of that mess? That seems like doozy.
Well, you know what? We're still actually Facebook friends. That's awesome. So I can see what he's doing these days, but,
no way.
So I met during that time, like in 2009, maybe it was even eight at that point, 2008, I met with all these bankruptcy attorneys in Austin and they said the only way out is bankruptcy. And morally, I don't really agree with, I think a lot of people abuse bankruptcy. They make bad financial decisions and then they're like, here's the easy way out.
It's an escape net. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't believe in that. I believe in owning your mess. And I also don't believe it's my job to judge. So, you know, I did a lot of thinking and I found out he'd actually ripped other people off. It wasn't just me. You know, there were many other people and they were throwing good money after bad. They were pursuing them legally and not getting anywhere. And I didn't want to throw good money after bad. So I actually decided I'm going to give judging him to God. Just give it to God. Let him deal with it. And I'm going to bust my butt and figure out how to pay off all this mess. And
wow.
During that time, you could actually negotiate with banks, right? So I would call up a bank, you know, use my Southwestern skills here, right? Call up a bank and say, hey, I know that I owe you 120 grand because, you know, he stole it, right? It wasn't me stealing it, but I can't pay that. Here's what I can do. Can we meet in the middle somewhere? And and so
you crewed them.
Yeah. We negotiated, right? And came up, you know, settled on a number and I made payment plans and it took me about 5 years to pay it all off. But I could feel like I did everything in my power to own the fact that I trusted the wrong person and made a stupid, you know, and
yeah.
And I could feel morally good about it.
I was going to say, how did that feel like when you sent the last payment in? Because by the way, like for people who are listening, like this is a very serious, like it was not your fault, but it was for sure your problem. Like, it was just this, one of those situations where, you know, in Southwestern, they teach it's not a controllable, it's like a PR issue, but significantly much more heavy in consequences. And also the context of the fact that it was 2008. And so banks, lenders, and anything having to do with financial industry at that time, during that time frame, was chaos. I mean, absolute chaos. And so even the fact that you were able to even negotiate and they budged, or they like moved, or that you were able to like get some sort of leniency or like some help, I guess, if you will, to call it, for lack of a better word, is in itself quite extraordinary, because that was a time where every penny, literally penny, to a bank mattered, because it was a house of cards. There was, everybody was tumbling. The real estate market, of course, was going bananas. You had property, which is also just outrageous. So how did that feel at the end of the 5 years when you went, hey, this is it, I'm done?
Yeah, it felt great. You know, but sometimes like when you actually reach a goal, it's kind of anticlimactic. You know, it's like it's who you are becoming in the pursuit of that goal, though. Like that, you know, we hit the goal and it's like, okay, done.
Or next. Interesting.
But it's the evolution of character that happens, like who you have to become in order to achieve that. I think that's even more important.
That's amazing. Well, I mean, I always like think, because we, and this will probably come up later, but we can talk about it for briefly. It's that feeling of the end of your first summer, when you like take the cashier's check and then start driving to Nashville. I mean, I assume it had to feel something like that in some ways, where like, yeah, you're still cool about like what happened, and the person you became throughout that summer changed, obviously, but the feeling of satisfaction that you're like, hey, I did this.
Yeah.
This was my responsibility, and I took it by the horns and I owned it, which is so amazing. Like, such a cool, wow. I'm inspired. That's so cool. Good for you. I commend you for that. That's amazing. I imagine it must have felt something like that, but wow. So cool. Okay, so 5 years go on. That's paid off. Now you look up, it's not called Success Starts Now. Now you've transitioned the name. And then how did you decide, all right, we're going to do another, whatever, 10 years?
Yeah. Well, you know, Dave grew on me. The company grew on me. Everything grew on me. Me down, like, but
your dog grew also.
He actually, you know, traveled around. My dog traveled around to many different states with me. He lived in Austin and then Orlando and then Raleigh and Baltimore and Denver and
wow. San Francisco,
Seattle, LA, Orange County, Kansas City, Atlanta, and then Nashville. So one traveling pup.
That is a moving dog. That's amazing. But you get to this point, you get your stuff from storage. At this point, have you married Dave at this point? Like, how did, so at this point, yeah. Okay, your marriage is there.
Dave and I, so we knew each other from South, you know, since Southwestern, right? And back in the Southwestern days, I guess we were big fish in different ways in our little small pond, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. He was a bigger fish, I guess. He sold a lot of books.
Yeah.
I had a big team and I was a DSL and all that stuff. But
yeah, you're crushing it.
Dave annoyed the crap out of me. he was obnoxious and cocky and arrogant and you know, it's like a fungus. He grew on me over time.
Dave, if you're listening, we love you. But
I especially love him. But no, he also matured quite a bit, obviously, right? He and you know, I love Dave's heart and his loyalty. And he was also that person that, like, you know, I look at life like, I mean, it's like you're going to battle to do life. And, you know, the person that I want as my partner in life is somebody that can do battle with me, like somebody, he's the person that I want to go to war with, right? Like,
yeah.
And but we started dating in 2009, got married in 2012, but it is kind of wild when we're running a business together, right? We're building something together. And
just a cool way. Yeah, I was actually just having this conversation with a buddy of mine. We were just having beer and some wings, and you know, we were talking about like the norms of people, like when they go, you, when you get married and all this stuff. And I was thinking, you know, he asked me, cause I've only been married, it's about to be 2 years here in February. So, you know, not super experienced yet, And as Dan Moore would say, I've only done it once, so I can't say I have a lot of experience. But the one thing that I am very confident and I know at this point in my marriage is I'm just glad, like you just said, when you're picking your person, it's like you got to pick a roommate forever. Mm-hmm. That sounds super basic, but it's honestly like that. Like I've had roommates where I'm like, I cannot believe I'm living. Like it's a month in and you're like, this is awful there, you know? And then I've had roommates who I go, you know what? This is a great situation, mm-hmm. right? But regardless of the kids and the house and all this, like you just have to pick a person where it's like every day, can you wake up and go, this is great. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it won't be, sometimes it won't, but like what you just said is perfect. It's just picking that partner and just knowing who you want in your life. And man, we probably have a lot more than just that in common, but that's something you and I have in common is our partners are people who we both go, you know what, this is at the end of the day, this is who I look over and this is the person fighting with me. Not against me, but like fighting life with me, like together.
Sometimes we are fighting with each other.
Oh yeah. It happens.
It's interesting. So we used to have business partners that were married that never disagreed, right? Dave and I, like in a business meeting, often don't agree. Like it's less common for us to agree and have the same point of view than to not. Which, you know, I guess there's some good and bad, but but you know, love is a choice, and we're actually like our marriage is healthier and stronger than it's ever been because we've had to like lean in and work on things, and we've gone to marriage counseling since before we got married. Yeah. We've stopped a couple times, and then it's like we had a Jerry Springer moment, and I'm like, I need back in.
You know, I by the way, and then this is a little bit tangential, and I want to keep on topic, but what you're saying is so important. My wife and I got marriage counseling week one. I mean, it was, and people are like, oh my God, your marriage is on the rocks. No. It's not because it's on the rocks. It's to avoid it being on the rocks. Like it, you go to the doctor to get a checkup, or you should anyway, but like it was she's a counselor herself. She's a therapist licensed. And so to her, therapy is important in general. And I believe in that wholeheartedly. And so the minute we got married, I was like, hey, first step, let's go find a marriage counselor. It's silly to try to think that we're going to just do this alone and we don't know what's ahead. But I know for a fact, having help is huge. And it just, there's so much benefit to it. And the downside is like minimal, if anything at all, versus just, all right, we're not experiencing this at all. We don't know what we're doing. Let's just try to hack it. Like it's amazing the bravery that people have when they do it like that. It's just like, go get immediately. But it's better to be proactive than reactive. And especially when it comes to something as important as a marriage. So I love that you said that. That's awesome. So tell me a little bit about the now. I guess you're looking back and you know, you're president of Southwestern Speakers, Southwestern Training, and then senior partner at Southwestern Consulting. So what does your life look like today? Like, what is your day to day? What is your, like, what about your job is like maybe your favorite? And tell us a little bit about kind of what today looks like for 2023 and 24 looks like for you.
Mm. Well, every day is very packed and very different, right? So, you know, I try to do as little thinking as possible. I have an incredible assistant that, you know, she's filling my calendar and I just go where she tells me. But on each day, like, you know, at Southwestern Consulting, you know, we help people achieve their goals in life. Like we help people grow and we're doing that through coaching or doing that through training or doing it, you know, through the different products that we sell. But we have a principle. We're very principle based. One of the principles that we believe in is that we're practitioners of what we preach. So anybody who's coaching something or training or speaking, like we actually live and eat and breathe those principles. So we all sell too. So, you know, I am selling coaching training. I sell all of our service. So I'm weird. Instead of like being in one little bucket and one bucket and focusing on one product line, I kind of sell it all and deliver it all. And then, you know, we have a lot of different team members. So I've definitely had to learn an intense amount of focus and efficiency and also how to, with learning how to focus, you know, there's just, intentionality. Like I'm intentional with my work time, and then I'm able to flip a switch and be focused with my family because we have three kids. Wow. But you asked multiple questions there in one.
Yeah, another, sorry.
That's okay. another piece of your question there was about, like, what do I love doing? I love helping lots of different companies. You know, I feel like I could have one company, but in my role as a business consultant, as a coach, I have these incredibly awesome relationships with owners of extraordinary companies, and I learn as much from them as they learn from me. And I'm able to influence the growth of their company in a cool, profound way. So that's just awesome. So I guess there's multiple things I love. I love learning about all these different businesses. I love helping them. And then, I love leading people internally in our company and seeing their growth. Sometimes, it's harder to be a prophet in your own land. Right. And your external coaching clients, they're just grateful and thankful for, oh my gosh, I'm going to do this and it helped me so much. Right. And internally, sometimes it's like, some of the conversations are more challenging, but I appreciate it because it helps me to grow.
Yeah. I love that. I wanted to ask you, you work with so many different industries and so many different companies. Are there things that you're noticing in today's entrepreneurial world that are common, I don't want to say mistakes, but common areas of growth that your clients have, regardless of industry? Or do you find that it's depending on if it's, this is a person who does real estate, so typically this is where we really can inject a lot of growth, or this is person's in, solar, or this person's in construction. So, what I'm asking is, generally speaking, everybody needs a little bit of coaching everywhere. I think that's fair. But do you find that it's pretty common across the board, or is it more based on industry?
The people need the same thing regardless of industries. The sales principles are the same, and people struggle with the same things. So in sales, for example, if we're talking about at a corporate level, and we can talk about it at an individual level, but at a corporate level, I've consulted, companies all over the world. I've flown away, as far as New Zealand and Latvia, yep, to shadow salespeople, right? Like to different countries. And organizations make the same mistakes. Most companies have sometimes their sales process isn't quite right, or they're not tracking the right activities. So they're actually elongating they're elongating their sales process, or sometimes they think they have sales training, but they don't actually have scripting. They tell their people what to do, not how to do it. Hey, go get referrals, but they don't give them the techniques for how to get referrals. You see that corporately everywhere. And then at an individual level, it's the same stuff. People often know what they need to be doing. They don't know how to do it. Sometimes they don't always have the skill, and then they don't always have the will because they don't have somebody holding them accountable. So it's the same things. And then, leadership wise, so if we're getting, off of the topic of sales and talking about leadership, because we help with that too, it's often the same types of things. Most people got to be a leader because they were good at sales. So they got promoted, and then they're never given any formal training. So I'm real grateful for the Southwestern training, how we were developed into leaders, right? And taught leadership skills, but most aren't. They look at the people that they come up under and they say, oh, I really want to do that like him, or I never want to be like this person. And they're just kind of figuring it out as they go, but they've never been taught the things that we were taught, in Southwestern about how to do a one-on-one, or how to confront an underperformer, or how to run sales meetings that don't suck, or how to create vision, or how to, hold people account, all these things that are just critical to, sales management or to leadership.
That's wild because, you know, when you say that, and to anybody that sold books listening, and probably other people who didn't sell books were listening, to not try to sound elitist, but to me, that just sounds so basic, right? Mm-hmm. Because we learned that when we were 18 or, you know, in our college age. Yeah. And so it's amazing that, you know, and that's also not to say that you can't learn that anywhere else outside mm-hmm. of Southwestern. I'm not trying to exclude people, but I'm just saying it just sounds like, wow, that it I'm sure it gets a lot more complex as organizations grow and scale, but generally speaking, from a 30,000 foot view, that the fact that you're so correct, you know, most people, hey, you did great at sales, good job, now you're a leader, and the person has no idea what, you know, what to do or where to go with that. And it's so cool that you get to do that for them. Just to pick your brain for some advanced sales, I guess, or stuff here, but like, what would you say when it comes to, like, for example, leadership? I'll just ask specifically there. Maybe there's people out there listening who maybe they identify and like, okay, yeah, I did get promoted and I don't know what I'm doing. What are like the most common either mistakes that people make or things to avoid? Or on the other hand, whatever's easiest for you to answer, what are some like things that great leaders actually do well? Maybe like top three things that you're like, hey, every great leader has these three things, or every great leader doesn't do these three things.
Mm-hmm. You know, I can say the really cliche things like great leaders are great listeners, right? Which sure. We are, right? Just to talk about, you know, I guess maybe one specific thing that I see a lot is that people really don't understand how leadership and management go together. Andres, you don't know this about me, but I've written drafts of many books that I have on my computer that I've never published. And one of those being it's called Manage Systems to Lead People. Because I've interviewed many people and I ask them the question, which is better, management or leadership? And they almost always say leadership. Because they say, I don't want to be a micromanager. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to just, you know, be tough on my people, right? Like, management has a negative connotation, but you can't be an effective leader of people without managing things, like, you know, managing schedules, managing activity numbers, managing a process. You know, you have to manage the things so that you can inspect what you expect and know where to challenge someone, or you have to manage the systems or the numbers so that you know where to coach someone and what they need for inspiration. So those two things definitely go hand in hand, and I'm very passionate about management and leadership, how they're different, but how they're necessary for each other.
That is brilliant. That is that's good. Write that down if you're listening. That's so awesome. And so what is tell me a little bit more about Southwestern Speakers. I don't know that I'm as familiar with that branch of the family of companies, and what specifically is the goal of Southwestern Speakers?
Yeah, well, companies have national meetings, annual meetings, regional meetings. They have events. There's galas and fundraise. Like, there's events where people bring in speakers. We can source external speakers. So, you know, any speaker that someone needs for their meeting, we can go find them. But we also have a team of exclusive speakers that are exclusive to us. So many of our coaches also have written a book and they have a keynote, like, you know, my husband, for example, here, shameless plug, right? Yeah. He just wrote the book Servant Selling this year. And his keynote, you know, go figure, the name of his keynote is Servant Selling, on the same topic. And so he's a speaker that often speaks for sales audiences, and he also has a servant leadership program. So
I see. So you guys outsource, like, so there's a corporate retreat in Austin, my company's going to do this, and we need someone to come in and just really fire up our people and teach them about XYZ specifically, and then you go, okay, great, we got a repertoire of these speakers, and then we can send this person to go do that.
Yeah.
I see. That's cool.
To find the right speaker for your meeting.
That's cool. And how do you determine, like, do people come and ask you that for that specifically, or do they go, here's what we have, and then do you get to pick, okay, based on what you're telling me, here's the person I'd recommend? Is that how it kind of works, or?
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. That's genius. Yeah. I didn't know that's how it worked. Wow, that's so awesome. Well, if people are listening and they're like, hey, we need a speaker, rock solid. Yeah. I will say this has actually been a topic that's been discussed on the podcast before, where like when we go to sales school and we see all these amazing speakers, which probably are some of the people from Southwestern Consulting or, you know, the Southwestern speakers that you have, that you leave and then you go to like corporate events and they have these other people. And it's like, it's just not the same. Like, there's something about the way that people can speak and learn. And I don't know if it's, I actually even asked Dan Moore when we had him on the show, like, where did you learn your public speaking? And he goes, if you want to be a good speaker, you got to go speak. And so he said. And so, but like the fact that, you know, I even from my recollection, there's so many times where I remember some of the best speeches I've heard for motivation or for instruction or both came from people from Southwestern. I mean, it was just, they're just so good at it. So,
yeah. The difference between a good speech and a great speech is 1,000 speeches, right? Like, you actually have to get better at it. And, you know, it's stage time. So our coaches get a lot of stage time because they're getting out and doing sales training workshops and speaking in front of audiences that way. So, yeah, even though some of our speakers are not famous per se, like that household name everybody knows about, they can outspeak anybody. Like, the feedback, like, you know, a lot of companies, they'll hire the famous person for the name recognition, but then they suck on stage. And, you know, our people, like, it blows them away. But I wasn't a good, I was not naturally a salesperson or a speaker. I learned it from Southwestern, and I think even getting out on the book field and doing the demos that we had to do, like the 20, 30 presentations a day that we did, right? Like, that's where I initially started getting comfortable speaking in front of people. My first summer was, I mean, I did not start off quickly.
you're one of those slow builders.
Yeah, I was one of those. So growing up, I was shy. I never wanted to even sell Girl Scout cookies. My mom sold them for me. And I had heard about Southwestern I'd heard about it actually after my freshman year. My dad told me it was probably a scam, don't do it. So I didn't. And then one of my sorority sisters, Lori Long, had sold books. And I was overhearing people talking about it in the hallway that she made $17,000. So she was in the bathroom brushing her teeth. And I came up behind her and I had, you know, one question for her, really. Did it suck? And she said, no, you know, that's why I'm going back for my third summer. So I signed up, you know, right away, like on the spot with her. I said, I'm in, I'll do it with you. But I don't know why I said yet, because it was so out of my nature. It was just, I guess I just wanted to make money. But at sales school, like, I guess I didn't get much training before the summer. So I didn't know there was this approach thing I was supposed to learn. And I got there, you know, we had our stopover on the way to sales school in Crossville, Tennessee. And I was driving a walker. So I got there later than everybody else. And I didn't know I was supposed to be studying the approach, you know, along the way. And I walked in and everybody's like practicing their role playing their approach. I freaked out, didn't know what was going on, started crying. Lester Crafton actually like talked me off a ledge because I was bawling hysterically. And that was the first time that they said, hey, if you leave now, it's not quitting. And multiple times through my first sales school, you know, it was like, hey, if you leave now, it's not quitting. Because I wouldn't even knock on the imaginary doors. I was
terrified. They were hinting you, like, hey. Wow.
Yeah, so I was definitely one of those that didn't sell much my first few weeks, but things started to click along the way, and I worked hard, and I ended up being the top first year in you know, from North Carolina that summer, but it wasn't because of any natural innate Dave Brown like ability, right? Like, it was just because I worked and I learned and I asked questions and I started understanding the sales psychology and I started falling in love with sales. But that was my practice in front of people, right? My first.
So, I mean, and I guess that's right. I mean, I was talking to Ruthie about this too. It's like, hey, you know, like some people are like Kaya or Dave, where it's just like, you guys just, or Dustin, like it's just a thing that you do. You just, it makes sense for you. Great. And then there's other people who just have to like really learn along the way. But it's amazing that there's something to the fact that like anybody can do well. You don't have to be a Kaya Grady to do well at this, you know, and to earn enough to, you know, pay your school or whatever. Like it can work for, I'll say mostly everybody. I'm sure there are some exceptions to it. And I mean, even recruiting, there was definitely people where I'm like, this person, you want to believe in people as much as you can, but then at the same time, you're like, God, you definitely need to not do this. It's actually mean to take you out to this. That's a different conversation, but it's amazing to me that like, here you are. And like, it's such a cool story to say, hey, I was the girl that was crying and had to get talked off a ledge at sales school. And now I am the president. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. It's such a cool story. It's such a cool story to tell about growth and potential and what happens when you just dedicate yourself to a process and just commit to it and what can happen and how it can turn out. It's really incredible. Let's there's probably more stuff we could talk about with Southwestern Consulting. We'll probably jump back and forth, but since we're on this vein of how, you know, your first summer. So do you remember, like, first of all, I guess, where did you go that first summer?
Buffalo, New York. I had to think about that for a second.
Yeah, I was just south of Rochester my first summer. Beautiful. Chicago. Did you have an HQ set up?
No. We did not. I started Southwestern back in the days of when we had to knock on doors to find our place to live, right? Because it builds character. And
yeah. That's why. I love it. Okay, so you knocked on doors to find a house to live.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, and so we were actually supposed to go to Wisconsin that first summer, but during sales school, we kind of got pulled into a room and they said, change of plans, you're going to Buffalo, because apparently there was a magazine salesperson that died, got murdered or something in Wisconsin. So it was a big PR issue. So we didn't send anyone to Wisconsin because of that year. But yeah, we were in Buffalo, New York, and my roommate actually found our place to live. So she knocked on doors and yeah, she got her place to live and things came a lot more naturally to her. I'll just say it that way, is that she just knocked on a couple doors, found a place to live, sold some stuff by accident while she was out knocking on doors, finding a place to live. Like, you know, and I think I sold like three units my first week.
Let's go. Do you remember your first customer?
Yes. Yes. So my first customer wasn't until like 9 p.m. my first day. So I can tell you a little bit about my first day.
Yeah, I love first days. This is like, honestly, this is the one that, because the thing is, we don't have the same trajectory in our careers. We're not all, like we just said, we're not all, like not everybody went and sell 10,000 units, not everybody hits Mort, but everybody had that first insane day. So yes, please, your first store, whatever, however you want to tell this story, but I love these stories.
Well, you know, my story is really why I believe that sales is a learned skill. And if you desire to learn it enough, you can. But my first day, it was cold and rainy in upstate New York.
Yeah.
And I didn't really pack appropriately, because when I was thinking summer, you know, I'm from the South, like I was thinking shorts and t-shirts. And, you know, May in upstate New York is not shorts and t-shirts. So, Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I started early, you know, because I wanted to get a jump start on my day. You know, I started somewhere around 7:30 a.m. and I had gone and scoped out the street where I was going to start the night before and picked out the house and marked it with an X and everything and had practiced it in my head over and over and over again. I'd practiced walking up to that first door, knocking on the door, taking two steps back and having the mom answer and saying, hi, I'm, you know, and like, and are you the, or hi, are you the mom of the house? Right. Well, my first door, I parked and I remember my heart was like pounding out of my chest as I'm walking up to that first door and I'm rehearsing in my head what I'm going to say. I knock on the door, I take my two steps back, and then I had no words. Because it wasn't a mom that answered the door. It was a dad. And I hadn't mentally prepared for, what do you say if a dad answers the door? I couldn't even process in my brain that you would say, hi, are you the dad of the house? Right? Like, I couldn't flow in conversation well enough to even change the word mom to dad.
Right? Yeah. And for people who are listening, who are like, whoa, that's easy. And if you didn't sell books, because we got to address this. You have no idea. For a week, you've been knocking on imaginary doors hundreds, if not maybe 1,000 or more times, just saying, hi, are you the mom of the house? It's so much you have this memorized for the sake of just surviving sales school that when something like that, just even so small, throws you off, it really does paralyze you because you go, it's like you're speaking a foreign language and you only got taught, like, I imagine Europeans can have the same problem where they don't know any English. They get taught the words to say and they get sent out, but then something happens that isn't within the scope of the script that they got prepared with. And they're like, I don't know what to say now. Like, I have no words for this. It's just like that. It's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. So my words were like stuck in my throat and I'm just standing there with my jaw dropped. Like, just
it's like 7:30 in the morning. This sounds like, what the hell?
And the guy just says, I'm not interested. Slam. Right. Oh, and I want to get as far away from that house as possible. So I get in my car and I drive to the other end of the street, right? Like all the way down to the, where it dead ends. And I'm like, okay, let me start from this side now. And the bottom, so this is what happens next, but the bottom drops out of the sky, like cold, sleeting, nasty rain, like, And I am in a polo shirt and shorts, right? No jacket, no raincoat, nothing. And I try to get out and not, you know, I'm kind of wandering around, knocking on doors. Turns out Cheektowaga was mainly a retirement community at that point. There weren't a lot of kids in that area. It was very, a lot of older people. And I didn't know how to find the kids. So I'm just wandering around in the rain all day long, like knocking on doors and they say, I don't have kids, knocking on doors saying, I don't have kids. Like, and I'm so cold. My teeth are chattering. I have goosebumps. My hair is like matted to my head. I'm just wet. Nobody's going to let me in the hall.
You're thinking of the girl, Long, who was the girl that was brushing her teeth? You're thinking, Lori, you're like, she said this didn't suck.
Oh, yes. And I didn't know what to do. Like, I actually was thinking, do I sit in my car and wait this out? Do I drive back to my HQ? Like, do I go to Walmart and try to buy a raincoat? And I remembered Lori Long had said the answer to every problem
lies behind the next door.
Yes.
That's right.
That's so cool. Yeah. Right. So I knocked on a door and asked for help. And an old lady gave me a garbage bag to use as a poncho. So I, like, you know, wore my garbage bag. She didn't even invite me in the house to put it on or to dry off with the towel. She just handed me a like opened her door up this much, you know, and handed me a garbage bag through the door. And long story short, I was wandering around in the rain all day long, not barely getting into a door, definitely not selling anything. And then at about 9 p.m., I sat down with the family. I stumbled through my, you know, sales talk and showed some slicks. They bought a Fripple Town. And
what is that?
it was, so we had these 3-unit CDs back then. It was the new days, Andres, of CD-ROM.
Of course, 2000. I mean, the Twin Towers are still up. This is back in history.
Yes. Computers were just, you know, recently a thing. I didn't have a cell phone back then, you know, like we had no cell phones selling books. Like
CDs were the bee's knees.
Oh yeah. It's like, this is new stuff. Right. And they ordered a, and I don't remember if it was that, if that one was a weak order or a strong order, but I do remember being so excited that someone like,
it works.
Like, I think I even handed it to them and had them fill out their own order form. And because I didn't know how to fill it out, I was kind of awkwardly doing it. But I got so excited that I ran next door and I was just babbling with enthusiasm. And then they let me in and they did sign up for a Fripple Town 2 on a week order. I know for sure that was a week order. Yeah. But I did have two customers, not strong ones. I don't know. I don't remember if they came through or not. And the next day was equally challenging. But yeah, that's kind of how my book career started. It was me wandering around in the rain.
Did you at any point through that first summer, like have like that dirt pile moment where like, I need to go, this, like, I'm done. This is not for me. Did you have that moment?
That week I was wondering that quite a bit, but I didn't have a moment where I ever wanted to quit. But I had moments where I was emotionally breaking down. I had a moment. I actually had a big week where I sold like 700 and something units. So I went from like selling 15 units my first week or whatever that was to, you know, hitting bigger numbers later on in the summer. I had a week where I sold a lot, but I cried through the whole week. And I was just an emotional wreck. And I called my, I don't know if I called Lori or I called Alan Ware, my OL, but I told someone, I'm not going to knock on doors tomorrow. I want to follow Lester Crafton. And I made it up in my head that he was going to be the solution to my problem. Like I was going to follow him. And nothing else was going to do. And Lester was an OL in a neighboring org. And I didn't know this, that he'd been off schedule for weeks and hadn't knocked on doors. But I remembered how kind he was to me on that way to sales school when I was broken down crying because I didn't know the approach. And he helped me through that. And I knew I needed him to help me through this emotional breakdown that I was having. And I do remember Lester was kind of a wreck too. We were both a wreck together. We started the day, you know, so he came out of off schedule-ness to drive around with me. And we stopped by a grocery store. He loaded up on groceries for the day to eat. We wandered around. We went by Jim Kelly, quarterback of the Buffalo Bills. We went by Jim Kelly's house like 12 times during that day because he's like, I want to sell Jim Kelly. You know, never got to talk to anybody other than the nanny. But Lester started eating ants off of the sidewalk in one demo. Totally freaked them out. They ran into like, he's like, they taste like lemons. Like, family ran away scared. But he sold like 3 week units that day. So I definitely didn't see Lester on schedule. I definitely didn't see Lester sell a bunch of stuff. I really didn't. I never really followed somebody who sold a ton on the days that I followed. Maybe that says something about me. But it did what it needed. It helped just calm me down. And it was an emotional release. And it was like, I guess if this guy, like, I'm not in that bad a shoe. And I got therapy from him all day long while we rode around in a car. So I was able to go back to work and be fine.
That's awesome. You know, and I'm keeping an eye on the time here, but those are the days that are just as important as the big days. I mean, there's something to be said about the things that you learn when you know, we've all had a big day where it was like, wow, that was whatever the biggest day for you was, that's great. You know, it doesn't really matter. I mean, they do, but they don't. But like, that's an important day. You learned a lot about like how it works and the confidence, what it looks like when you're in the flow. And those are things that are important to know about yourself. But also those days where it's just like, I don't know if I can do this. And you just kind of learn how to deal with you at that time. And those are vital days of your life, I think, in my opinion, like at least for us as soul, you know, it's, I wouldn't trade either of those days, you know? And it's such an important thing. So, okay. So let's fast forward. So let's talk about some summers going forward. Where did you go? I guess, how did you decide to come back? So you get done with your first summer and, you know, I'm assuming it ramped up. Right. How did you feel about the accomplishment of, at the end when you looked back and you said, all right, here's where I started. Here's how it ended. How was that feeling?
It felt great. That felt great. So you talked to me earlier about the feeling of victory when I'd paid off all that debt. I remember the feeling of victory after my first summer more so than the feeling of victory.
That's amazing.
You know, and I even got kicked off of my honors thesis because I went out to sell books. The guy who was my, I don't remember what the term is, but the overseer of my thesis writing, he said, because I didn't work on the project all summer, I must be lazy and, you know, and not a hard worker. And I'm like,
nerve.
Like, so I had so much confidence from climbing this mountain, you know, selling books that I took on what is normally a 1.5 to 2 year thesis project. I took it on in a semester to prove it to him that I could do it. So I found another person to be my sponsor and started another project. And I remember when I graduated, I went to that professor's office and I left a copy of my thesis, like the professor that told me I was lazy and that's why I was being kicked off the project. I left a copy of my thesis on his desk, you know, with my summa cum laude, like, you know, like,
eat that, bro. Yes.
And, but yeah, I had a huge feeling of victory after my first summer because it was so outside of my comfort zone to sell books. And I just felt like it was an amazing accomplishment. I still wasn't 100% sold on Southwest. I still thought that people that sold for like 3 or 4 summers were weirdos. Like you have to be really strange to do that. And
and then you stuck around for 9. Let's go.
Ultra weird. Ultra weird.
That's wild.
But yeah, so I was actually planning, you know, your wife is a psychologist. I was planning on going to grad school for psychology.
Oh.
And Chris Samuels said, hey, Emmy, you know, how about like, would you like to delay, you know, grad school just a little bit by going out to Arizona and recruiting for a semester? And I'm like, what's recruiting? Like, nice. And I had recruited after my, I guess I skipped my second summer. I'm talking to you about my third, but my second summer was in Wisconsin. We ended up going back to Wisconsin, the glory land. Yeah. And it was an amazing, easy summer. It was an org. It was that magic, one of those magical orgs that KJ ran the org and almost everybody in the org sold over 8,000 units. Like, you know, I did 8,500 units my second summer. Everything was
no easy. Way.
Yeah. And wow. I mean, it was just like, it was just easy. Right. And I had two recruits. One of my recruits, he quit week 3 because he found out he had a baby and he had to go to a paternity hearing. And then my other recruit, she ended up being the number 2 first year in the company behind Dave Brown. So
nice.
Lana Laws. She was amazing. And, but it was just an easy peasy summer, where, you know, I didn't know much about leadership. Like I was kind of nervous to have Lana follow me. And I was like, what do I do? And Kevin's like, well, just show her how to work hard and have fun. And, you know, that's all that matters. But I was an easy summer. But, after that summer I didn't know if I was coming back. That's when Chris was like, hey, you want to go to Arizona and recruit? And I'm like, what do you mean? And he said, well, you know, you full-time recruit, you can bring a team. And I'm like, well, I haven't been to Arizona. So, okay. And I thought that was going to be a one semester gig. It ended up me, you know, with me spending 5 years in, in Arizona. But I, that third summer, I recruited pretty easily. I mean, my first team was 18 kids and,
holy, that's unheard of now.
Yeah. And when I got out on the book field, it was hard though. Like it was so hard. I was a first time OL, co-OLing with Jason Cranford and I didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, when you have that many people, when you have an org of 40 people and,
nuts.
And you know, you show up on Sunday, like I remember showing up for the week zero meeting and kids were coming up and they were saying, you know, I don't have an HQ and I want to quit and my car broke down. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. Right? I was just kind of at a loss. And I actually, that third summer, forgot how to sell. Like I was so screwed up in the head from like trying to figure out how to take care of my team that I could not even give a book away. Like couldn't, I didn't remember how to like, and, you know, and I hit Mort my second summer. Right. And then my third summer, I couldn't remember how to sell. I did have a dirt pile moment that summer where, you know, I had a mom answer the door and look me dead in the eyes and say, why don't you get a real job? And I started crying because I'm like, I'm working so hard. They don't even know how hard I'm working. And I'm sitting in my car in the driveway crying. I couldn't even like get out of her driveway because my eyes were so watered up. Right. And I go to a payphone because we didn't have cell phones back then. And I call into Southwestern Corporate and Chris Samuels isn't available. So they put somebody else on the phone and the person they put me on the phone just says, just stick with the script. And he starts role playing with me the script of the power division and I'm in education and I'm like, what are you saying?
This makes no sense. Well, and just for context is even with people who sold, who might have sold more recently, there was a time where there was two different divisions in the company and there was actually two number one first years. There was two number one or whatever it was. They sold different books and there was two scripts. So you sold VLs, which were volume libraries, or you sold the handbooks, which were a different set of books. There was two product lines. It was almost like two different companies that did that. So that's that for context, this is probably book kids who are listening right now. They're like, what do you mean by power? So yeah, a whole different division.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So it, I was telling him I've forgotten how to sell and he's role playing some script I'd never heard of with me, but, I was like, okay, this call is useless. I'll just go back to knocking on doors. And eventually during that summer, I kind of found my voice again, but I felt like a failure after that third summer as a leader, because half of my team quit and I didn't. I guess I didn't realize that, hey, in a door-to-door world, it's not that terrible if half of your team quits, right? But I learned so much. I felt like such a loser. And then I also ended up selling 9,000 units, which was not pathetic, but I was whiny. And I remember going to Europe with Lori Long and I'm in a cafe in Barcelona and I'm whining about how bad my summer was. And she goes, when are you going to stop talking about this? Like, what's wrong with you? Get over it. Like, I was like, okay, I'm over it. Like point taken, you know, and I, but I learned that I had a lot to learn about being a leader. And, Chris actually had me call every single person who was who quit on my team and have a feedback session. And it was amazing. I learned. So he said, you know, take what they say with a grain of salt, right? Because sometimes people don't want to own what they did and they might blame you for it or blame Southwestern or, but there's some things to learn in here. And I learned so much. I I also had people that were advocates for me, even though they were quitters. They would they would show up at my recruiting sessions the next year. Like I'd be interviewing a student, and this former fraternity president that I had recruited that had quit, he would show up at my interview and to say hi. And people would ask, like, hey, how do you know each other? And he'd say, well, I sold books, you know, but I didn't make it. I actually quit. And they're like, really? You did? And he would say, yeah, you know, I didn't listen to what Emmy told me to do. And, you know, but if you listen to her, if you tell her everything, you know, if you do everything that she tells you to do, you'll have a great summer. And it's like, they were my advocates because I owned my stuff and allowed them to, you know, own theirs, but also have a lot of pride about what they did. And I think that's one thing a lot of, you know, this is kind of a side note, Andres, but I think that's one of the things people don't do. Like a lot of times people don't go and have that exit conversation with people that leave properly. And what happens is that, and so this is something you can write down here. What happens is, if people have guilt, that guilt turns to, if it's not dealt with properly, it turns to shame. And shame, when it's not proper, you know, shame always turns to blame because we cannot live in a state of shame. So you end up blaming someone else. And we have to help people like own that, hey, you know, this is my part in it. You might have screwed this up or you didn't, like, but this is my part in it. And when they're able to own it and realize that they're still loved, even though they, you know, messed something up or didn't do something, they're still loved and valued and honored and respected and appreciated in spite of their mess, right? Then they can have peace with it.
Unbelievable. Like, oh, you know what? That is so profound to say, and we don't have enough people talk about that here on here. Well, first of all, thank you for saying that. But a lot of people who we've had on here that did not have a good exit, and it justified because it with a grain of salt, right? We're kids leading kids in a lot of ways. You know, granted, we've had a lot of experiences, but there is something to that where just letting people be like, letting people do that, letting people express that guilt and
yeah,
releasing it, you know?
Yeah. Express the, I'm angry about this. You didn't do this well as a leader. I didn't like this about Southwestern, but helping people realize what their part in it was, you know, owning what you did, allowing them to own what they did and have peace with it. Right. Like, otherwise, yeah, guilt turns to shame, shame turns to blame.
Yeah, and it's okay, like, right? This is just the thing we did in college. At the end of the day, right? In the grand scale of things, there's much bigger things. There's bigger mountains to climb in life in general. But at the time, it just felt like Everest, you know? But before Everest was discovered, there was another mountain that was huge, right? And it's the same way here. And to be able to have that conversation with people, I mean, it must have been a life-changing realization for you specifically, for like to hear from 9 people who told you, you know, it reminds me a little bit of Yvette had kind of the similar, a similar situation when someone sat down, and Matt Atchison also, we had him on the show, and he had the same moment where for him, it was like his friends who were also co-leaders, and they had to, like, it wasn't quite like a, what do you call it? A intervention, but it was kind of like one of those situations where they sit you down and go, hey, you need to hear this. Mm-hmm. And one of the we'll move on here because for the sake of time, we'll move on into some rapid fire questions. But I just want to say this: sometimes with these episodes, there's like these certain themes that are core. I don't know if they're core values of the person I'm interviewing, or if it's just like it just happens to be the flow of the tune that we're on today. But a lot of what I'm hearing from you, or quality that I'm admiring a lot in you, is you have this sense of ownership, from the embezzlement thing at the beginning that we talked about, to just taking ownership for what you made a mistake on, or things that you could have grown on as a leader, while also holding other people to own their stuff, right? Because it's both parties are the things that need to take ownership from, to taking ownership of your marriage and going to counseling, to taking ownership of, you know, yourself and sticking through and committing to a project. It's just such a cool lesson that you're teaching me today about owning what you have to own and holding people accountable for the things that they have to own. Mm-hmm. And the peace that comes with all of that is something I'm really taking away from this. So I'm really thankful that you're bringing this up because it's so cool. So cool. Wow. Gosh, man. Okay. I wish we had more time, but I do want to get to some rapid fire questions and then maybe a ponytail if you've thought of something to share, although you've had so many good stories, but is that okay?
Sure.
All right. So rapid fire. And by the way, we're going to have to just have you back on here. That's just what's going to have to happen. Maybe you and Dave can do an episode together. And we can, cause we do couples episodes, and they're fun. We had a month, like a couple of years ago, like all of February for like things, or we tried to do like themed episodes. Sometimes it was like all married couples that met because of Southwestern. Itself.
Yeah, we've done that before. We've had some co-interviews that have been kind of fun.
Yeah. So we'll have to have you guys back on together for that. And also if you know of somebody, and this is both to anybody listening and to you, Emmy, we are trying to get together with like a panel of spouses that didn't sell to have an episode where my wife who didn't sell interviews. We have the set questions and they will interview like the spouses and just be like, all right, what was it like when you found out about this? Or, you know, just to see, because it'd be kind of a fun little twist to what we do.
We have a name for them.
What's that?
We have a name for them at Southwestern Consulting. Spouse Western.
Yes, Spouse Western. Maybe that's what we'll call the episode, the Spouse Western episode. The sponies. Okay, so question number. So these are rapid fire. Doesn't mean you have to answer quickly, but just whatever just comes to your mind. If you don't remember, you can just say don't remember. But if you do, or whatever just comes to your mind as these come to you, that's fine. So number one, favorite territory by state that you sold in?
Yeah, Wisconsin.
You know, people who sold in Wisconsin always go to Wisconsin. Say, okay, there must be something. I've never been, but must be something to it.
In Atlanta, Georgia. I love that one too.
Ooh, yeah, warmer.
Yeah. I didn't put the soul in the South very much, but I like the South. There's good people there.
Fair enough. Your favorite turf. And by turf, I mean like kind of turf. So like big break, country, big country, low income, suburbia. I don't know.
Andres, here's more proof that I was a weirdo. I sold in different turf every year because I wanted to prove that you could sell in anything. I wanted to show my team that you could sell in any turf.
You're one of those. Listen, territory does not matter if you're like you that knows how to sell in every territory, but it does matter. So now you're the exception to my rule.
It's also like, yeah, there's some places I definitely think suck worse than others, but I wanted to at least prove that it's possible wherever you are. Like,
but did you have a favorite? Like, did you out of your 9 years, were you like, all right, big brick in the country is awesome, or whatever?
Yeah, big brick country, like wealthy country, populated country. That's sweet stuff.
That's bread and butter, right? No money objection. Names roll off. It's just really. It's like, if I was going to do it all over again, that's the thing about, and we've had this conversation too on the show, where it's like, if everything hit the fan and you just needed to go make money, like that thing that we can all take away is if I need to grab a bag full of books, just sample book, and just be like, all right, I'm going to sell some books. I could do it. But if I had to do it, big break country, all the way. It's just the best. Okay. Favorite advanced sales tape.
Well, I always love the Trade George advanced recruiting. Like it was, it was a recruiting training, but I think it helped me as much with sales as it did recruiting.
Have you heard the story about that recording? Okay. So we had Trey on the show and he told us about that. It is a masterclass. It really is a masterclass in recruiting. The way that happened is, I guess they were at GRS. And he started just kind of like, somebody asked him, it was just like one of those conversations you have on the side. It wasn't even like a panel or anything. It was just like a thing on the side. And he started saying some gold nuggets, and Lee McCroskey was like, hold on. So he went and grabbed like a microphone and a recorder and said, just okay, talk. And he just talked for like 3 hours, and people were just like taking it in. And that's it. It wasn't like a planned conversation. He just off the cuff just recorded that. And honestly, it's like,
it's gold.
Gold. It's really, really good. I heavily agree. Okay. Favorite HQ?
My first summer. Mm-hmm. Linda Wojciechowski in upstate New York. She was an amazing single mom, just wonderful human being.
Gotta love that. Okay. Favorite breakfast spot?
This one's the most memorable. I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but somehow we ended up at the Triple K in Georgia. All white men in a and a diner.
No way.
The Triple K diner was our breakfast spot. No. I don't even realize that it was KKK. It said KKK.
That is bold. That is a bold place. I'm looking at the map here. Like, usually I go try to find the Triple K Eats or something. I'm not finding it. But that is amazing. Wow. What a place to eat. They only served egg whites. All right, here we go. favorite follow day.
I don't know, but one of the most memorable is I asked to follow Dustin Hillis, and I guess it was a crazy day for him and for me. But I flew into to follow him, so I actually was doing a skydiving event with my org. And I needed to, like, right after the skydiving event, go and travel to Texas to shadow him. And I'm like, literally, after we pulled the chute, I'm literally like looking at my watch as I'm falling, like, hurry up, I got to get to the ground faster so I can catch my flight. And then I get to his HQ kind of in the middle of the night, and I have to like bang on the door, and he lets me in, and there's a bunch of dudes there, and like there's piles of, it's dark and people are sleeping, and there's just like guys sleeping on the floor on piles of laundry, and there's like a snake in an aquarium, and he shows me a pile of dirty clothes to sleep on. And in the morning I realized I'd forgotten my toothbrush. Like, I wake up and I actually, in the light, I see what I was sleeping around, right? It was gross. But in the morning, I tell him I forgot my toothbrush, and he offers me a Q-tip because he said, we can't get off schedule to buy you a toothbrush. Like, he hands me a Q-tip to, you know, I kind of get my teeth, but crazy day.
You can sell in anything. What a legend. Okay. Favorite off schedule story.
So my, fifth summer, which was my last full summer, after that, I was a DSL and I was kind of working partial summers, but, my fifth summer, I had never been off schedule before. And I had a bunch of people in my org that was off schedule. So I wanted to try it out. I actually consciously, deliberately chose to get off schedule just to see what it felt like. And I...
Full experience.
Yeah, I went to the movies. I did all the things, right? All the things. And, you know, I was like, I can't just commit to being off schedule for a day. I've got to really feel what this is like. So I don't know if I was off schedule for a week or what, but I decided this sucks. I'm going back to work. But, you know, the cool thing that I learned about it is I actually learned how to bring people back from the dead. So I have an incredible skill that I could take somebody who's was completely off schedule, hadn't knocked on doors in forever, and had like, and I could revitalize them, you know, and help them get back on track. And because I knew what it felt like and how to come out of it. So,
wow. I will say, I was way off schedule my third summer, and my brother never got off schedule, at least not that I know of. But in my head, I'm like, you know, that is the full experience.
Yeah.
Is really understanding what it's like to just go to the movies on a Tuesday, and you're like, whoa, this is trippy. Yeah. So I get it.
Yeah, my last summer, it was a different experience. Maybe I shouldn't say this one, I'm kind of calling, I was only selling for a little, you know, like six weeks, and it was just selling enough to hit 3,000 units so I can get paid off my org. And yeah. So in the morning I would call Matt, and he'd be like, hey, you know, you going to work today? And I'm like, nah, I think I'm going to like run 4 miles, go to the tanning bed, like get my nails done, and I might work later on. And it was just, it wasn't an off schedule. Like I'm like suffering and struggling and don't want it. It was just like, I just want to do what I feel like doing today. And you know, that
You were on schedule for someone who needed to sell 3,000 units and had the skill to sell 10. Like it didn't matter. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like people who listen, if you're listening, you're first here. This is not, you're not this person. You are not there.
I evolved to that point.
When you have sold 10,000 units, hit more multiple times, have brought 18 person teams, and you're just trying to make money to like just pass the time, that's when you can do that. Otherwise, get to work.
Go to work. Like I never got off schedule till my fifth summer, right?
Yeah. You gotta earn that. You don't just like graduate to off schedule. Don't be like me. Favorite sales day, whether that was the biggest day you ever had on units, or it could be just like something happened that was like, wow, this changed my life, or like a memorable day in the book field that you're like, that was a good day.
I learned the power of intention, like how you can choose something. And because you choose it, you make it happen, right? Whatever you think about, you believe about. So like some of the days that just popped in my head as you asked that, I had a day where, you know, somebody was following me and they're talking about like, you know, selling the bag is impossible. Blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, we're going to sell the bag at the next house. And I sold, and I had another day where they said, you know, I was trying to make the point that selling, you know, the sales presentation is made in the introduction, not the presentation. So every sale I'm going to make today, I'm not even going to show them the books, right? Like we're not even bringing the sample case into the, you know, and so we sold the bag that day. We sold other things, right? Like,
wow.
There were, you know, but I remember listening to a good news, call in the morning, and somebody saying that Michael Graham had sold 317 units the day before. And I was like, wow, I've never done that. I wonder if I could do that. And I can, right? And then I sold 318 that day. But it was learning that if I truly believed that something was possible, it could become possible. So that's not one day, but it's, I guess, a few little.
Yeah. It brings up the idea that like, it, the best day in the book field is the day you chose it to be. Like, yeah. And that's great. Wow. So cool. I mean, I have so many questions about that, but again, we'll keep an eye on the time. And then the last one of the rapid fire, then we go to ponytails, is who's the most famous person that you met, or if you met any at all?
Selling books?
Yeah.
I am strange because I could be eating dinner beside someone. Like I literally took some of my clients to dinner and I'm like, why are they at that table getting so much more attention than us? And my client is like, you know, that's Blake Shelton and Miranda Lambert, right? And I'm like, I don't even notice.
Michael Jordan, do you know? Like he's eating with LeBron and Messi.
Yeah.
So. You wouldn't know.
Wouldn't even know.
All good. Yeah. So that we threw that in there because it started becoming a theme, but sometimes people are like, I don't, or they just never met anybody famous, which is
fine. We tried to sell to Jim Kelly. Like,
yeah, that was good. Yeah. See, like stuff like that. It's like, all right, that's famous. Tom Cruise lives over there or whatever. That's fair. Okay. Well, that concludes the rapid fire questions. Now we can go into the ponytails. Typically just for people listening, and while you think of one, it could be anyone, but it's typically a story where people are like, man, this is one of my favorite things that happened in the book field, or it could be a reflection on the time selling books, or it could be just a life lesson that you learned. And so if you can just share with us like one of those stories where it's like, man, this one I'll take with me. Or just any closing thoughts that you have, this would be the time. So this is Emmy Brown's Ponytails.
I don't even know where to start. There's so many stories from the book field that I've just forgotten, that all those times just kind of bleed together. If ownership is a theme of my life, then surrender off also is. So I'll share this just as a closing thought. I think that one of the reasons why I had such a hard time that third summer is that I just wanted it so badly. And I think sometimes people just want something so badly that they're just getting frustrated and they're not just being themselves and they're not allowing it to happen. At Southwest, kind of fast forwarding to Southwestern Consult, you heard me talk about in the story of getting ripped off through my construction loans, right? Like how I learned surrender. I've had to practice surrender again and again and again and again, and just learn how to let it be. In 2012 and 13, I had like some years at Southwestern Consulting where I was just frustrated, right? Like just frustrated with like things happening that weren't in my control. And I didn't like changes that were made, and, you know, and in Southwestern, we were always taught like, hey, you can control this, you can influence this, and this is just what you have to accept, right? But I think a lot of times we have a hard time taking those things from Southwestern and actually applying them to life later on, right? And we have a hard time identifying we all learned, hey, the only thing you can control is your work ethic and your attitude, like, you know, your hours, your demos, and your attitude. That's it, right? Like that is all you can control. But how do you apply that to your life later on? You know, so I had this year and a half where I was just pissed off at the world and just frustrated. And Rory Vaden actually was in my living room and told me, Emmy, you have a heart problem. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, ah. and I was just mad until I went to a Christmas service at church and heard our pastor give the sermon saying, let it be. And I realized that I was sucking at surrender. I was not good in that moment in life at realizing what I could control, what I could influence, and what I needed to accept. So I took the next year of my life and I made it my New Year's resolution to learn surrender. So I know there's a lot of people that are listening that might not believe in New Year's resolutions. They might think they're a bunch of junk, but a New Year's resolution, all it is just a goal that you happen to set at the beginning of the year, right? And they usually don't work because people make them so nebulous, right? That I want to be happier in 2024, right? But
what does that mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I took this very nebulous concept of surrender and I made it tangible, right? And hey, what can I control to actually make my situation better in life? And I gave myself a surrender score on a scale of 1 to 5 every day. I had a theme song for the year, but I got better at being surrender, I got way better at surrender that year and I got to being happier, right?
Wow.
But, you know, I just share that because, you know, there's these things that we learn in Southwestern that people aren't successful just because they sold books. They're successful if they actually take the principles and learn how to apply them in their lives. Like selling books is just a thing, right? But it's the principles that matter.
And that is amazing. I mean, that is why people who didn't sell that many books go on to have these giant companies. Mm-hmm. And people who sold a ton of books sometimes go out and fail.
Absolutely.
Don't succeed as they want to.
I have seen people take the principles that they learned in Southwestern in one summer and be more effective in applying them than people that were there for 7 years, right? Like it's what you actually do with it.
Mic drop, Emmy Brown. That is woo. Okay. Well, let me just say it's been an absolute honor and pleasure to have you on this show. Thank you so, so much for being here. Oh man. I hope you had a blast because
I had fun.
This was so good. I'm going to close out this episode. Don't you leave. I'll say goodbye to you once we're done recording, but guys, thank you so much for listening. Here's the deal. If you guys want to reach out to Emmy, maybe you want someone to speak at your event. Maybe you sold around the same time. You want to say hi, whatever the reason, we're going to put her website and or like ways for you to contact us to, or her to reach out. If you're curious about a career with Southwestern Consulting or working with Emmy in general, do reach out. We will obviously pass that forward. And, at the end of the day, just make sure you subscribe, like, share, follow. If you like the comments below, if you like the episode, make sure you leave a comment below. Also leave us a review. We would love you for that a lot. So thank you very much, everybody. Emmy, thank you for being here. You are awesome.
Thank you for having me.
This was a blast. All right. We'll catch you in the next episode, everybody. Bye-bye.